Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today it is about rock and roll. We are going to talk to Aaron Polsky, who left his former post as the beverage director at Harvard and Stone to launch his own canned cocktail company called Livewire Drinks, hence the tune, where he is literally capturing lightning in a can by rounding up some of the world's best bartenders and having them contribute drinks to Livewire, and they get paid royalties from them. Basing this on a music industry model, you couldn't get more rock and roll than that, could it? Well, wait till you hear some of the stories that Aaron has to tell. So buckle down and let's get rocking. And our levels are all good. So hi. 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 Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. And just tell everybody who you are.
They are. My name is Aaron Polsky. I'm a bartender here in LA, and I founded a canned cocktail company called Livewire, which brings the cocktails of the world's best bartenders to the public.
Yeah, and you have been bartending for a long time. You're one of these bartenders who I think people in the community, if they haven't met you, would recognize you because you're very distinctive as well.
Even in a mask.
Yeah, even in a mask, they would know because you've got you're a tall guy, you got the hair, you got the whole thing. But you've been on this scene for quite some time. When did you start bartending?
Yeah, I started bartending in 2018, when I turned 21, it was at a bar called White Star on the Lower East Side in New York.
Did you say 2018?
Sorry, when I was 21.
I was like, that was like 2 years ago. I feel like I've encountered you before that. when you were 21.
Sorry. I started in 2008. I don't know if that's what I said.
Okay. Time is a concept now during this COVID period, right?
Totally. So I started in 2008 when I was 21 at this bar, White Star on the Lower East Side in New York. I was in New York for 10 years. And I moved out here to LA in 2015. And I've been bartending pretty much up until March 16th.
So, yeah, right. So you started bartending right when you turned 21. So that means I'm guessing you had aspirations to bartend?
Yeah. So when I was 18, I started working at a restaurant and I really became immersed in the food world and I became really fascinated with it. And sort of around the same time, I started reading about these bars that were opening up. And this was 2006. Mm-hmm. Def & Co. had just opened, I think. Milk & Honey had been open for 6 years. Pegu Club had either just opened or had been open for a couple of years. And so I started, you know, taking my fake ID to all these places and trying to get in there. You know, what's funny is that, like, I think that I started reading about them because I got, like, you know, the Zagat Guide used mm-hmm. to also do, there was the Restaurant Guide and there was definitely the Bar and Nightlife Guide, but there were two more. I don't remember what they were. But anyway, I would just, like, flip through the Bar and Nightlife Guide and be like, what places have the best cocktails? You know, because in the front couple pages of the guide, it would have those lists. and I would see the place that had the best cocktails. And I remember Milk and Honey was, like, this, you know, in this little, like, Zagat blurby thing, would talk about the secret number.
It was a little sidebar, yeah.
And it was this holy grail. I was like, how do I get this secret number? And then the guy that I worked with at the time at a restaurant, I ran into him at Flatiron Lounge, which was also recognized at the time for being incredible. But my friend Giuseppe Gonzalez was working there mm-hmm. at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was in there and I was saying what's up to him. And I ran into my friend Mark, who was working at Per Se at the time. And he... I was working at Bouchon, which was like the cafe mm-hmm. below, Per Se, in the Time Warner Center. And Mark, you know, we were talking about it, and I was, again, 18 or 19, and I was like, and Mark is like, oh, yeah, I have the phone number for Milk and Honey. Do you want it? And I was like, you would give that to me?
Oh, that's so cute. Laughing that much, but that's so adorable. It's like you're so young to be, and you're aiming so high, and it's like, you know.
Oh, my whole life.
I love
that's
it.
The story of my life. So
he gave it to you.
What's that?
He gave it to you. He gave you.
He gave it to me, and I started going.
And you were underage. Now they're closed now, so they're not going to get in trouble.
Yeah,
so you
yeah,
were going when you were underage.
But I was underage for all of them.
Oh my god, that's amazing. I love it.
I think the statute of limitations has expired, I think.
So everybody's safe.
On anybody
everybody's
getting prosecuted safe. For that. But, I would go, and then, like, PDT opened, and I would start going there, and I just, like, I lived at those spots. Like, made money at restaurants, spent it all on cocktails.
Wow, so you didn't have what most 19-year-olds have, where you're getting drunk off wine coolers, like, in a van by the river or something.
I did that too.
Okay, just making sure. Because, you know what it's like when you start drinking nice cocktails, you know, your palate changes and you're like, oh, I can't just drink that bottle of Cuervo, you know, anymore, or whatever it is.
Well, I had this epiphany moment when I was, like, 19, and I was like, wait. Your palate's only really good for your first drink or two. Got it. I'll start my night at the fancy bars and then drink cheap shots for the rest of the night.
That is so smart. I know the bartender at the Dresden said that to my husband because I'd go there. I'm like, why do you keep feeding him shots of Fernet? He's like, because he's already had this many drinks. He doesn't taste anything anymore. I'm like, yeah, he doesn't remember anything anymore either.
It's true.
Oh my god, that's incredible. So then by the time you turned 21, you were kind of like, everybody already knew who you were.
Yeah, so I, like, a week after my 21st birthday was my first hosting shift at Milk and Honey. Mm-hmm. And then I had been there for maybe like six months. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it was like 6 months, and then the owner texted me from White Star, which he had just opened, mm-hmm. and he was like, hey, it's slow over there, come over here, which was a 10-minute walk.
Yeah,
I need your help barbacking, which I'd never done before. I had been a server in the restaurant for mm-hmm. from 18 to 21.
Yeah.
And I went over there, and he showed me how the dish machine worked and had me run glasses up and down. And that was bar backing. And then about an hour and a half into it, he had me grab a jigger and fill an empty Old Overholt bottle with water. And Old Overholt is a brand of rye that was our house brand there. But
I've got a bottle in the kitchen right water. Now. The bonded one, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have bonded back then. Mm-hmm. It was just the 80 proof. Mm-hmm. But it didn't matter. It was water. Mm-hmm. And he had me pour an ounce at a time, keep refilling the bottle, and just pour into a jigger, and then had me pour 3/4 of an ounce for about half an hour.
Wow.
And then had me pour 3/4 into a 1 ounce jigger. And then pointed to the shelves, and he was like, all right, this is 10, this is 8, this is 12, pour 2 ounces of this, 3 ounces of this. We weren't making cocktails at White Star at the time. It was an absinthe bar. And neat spirits. It eventually evolved, like the people really wanted the cocktails that he was known for. And so he eventually relented and gave them to him. But anyway, that night, he pointed out the prices and the pours. And he was like, I'm hungry. I'm going to go get a burger at Veselka. And, you know, you got this.
Oh, wow.
And I was, you know, shaking in my boots. And I mean, it wasn't anything, right? But it was the first time I was like behind the bar handling the money, which I had done before as a server. But, you know, like all that stuff. And
you were alone?
Like, what's that?
You were alone, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I was alone. It was just a one-person bar. So. Yeah. I was alone. And then as that went on, as he introduced cocktails, he introduced them kind of in stages. Initially, it was just built cocktails, mm-hmm. And rocks cocktails. So nothing stirred. It was all just like in a glass with a cube, mm-hmm. the cubes that he was known for, like the hand cut cubes mm-hmm. that you'll see at the varnish.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, very simple, and then it grew and it grew and it grew, and it eventually became all of the drinks that you could get at Milk and Honey or Little Branch or any of those bars. And I would, again, I was solo for most days. And I would have friends visit me. One of my best friends in the world, Eamon Rocky, who in the last couple of years released Rocky's Milk Punch, which is awesome. Would at the time he was working at a restaurant and we met there, he would like come in, and every week he would ask me for a different classic cocktail. And I, you know, I'd been drinking them for a while, but I like, I'm a bad studier. I read a lot and absorb a lot on my own, mm-hmm. but if I have to do it, I'm very bad at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like disorganized. I was terrible at like memorizing restaurant menu descriptions for restaurants, and like was very slow with this, with memorizing these. So I had this printout of this what's grown to be a semi-legendary Excel file in the bar world, and it was called new drinks list, which is like hilarious because it's so classic to like, you know, rather than date it, like, oh, we had a new drinks list, well, this is the most current version, so we'll call it new drinks list. And I had new drinks list stapled, and I would like, you know, and it would be probably, you know, 30 rows to a page. He'd be like, make me a 20th century. And that was the first page, and I would look. And I'd like look at it, and I'd be like, yeah, sure. Or I'd say, yeah, sure. And then I'd look. And I would be like, oh, I don't have whatever, cacao. Mm-hmm. And he'd be like, okay, well, make me an aviation. And I'd like look. And I'd be like, yeah, totally. And I'd be like, I don't have Violette.
Yeah.
And so, but that's where I learned to make cocktails. And eventually, Sasha, the owner, would let us print our own 10 drink menus for the day plus bartender's choice. So like, you know, from a list, mm-hmm. but I would be like, cool, I want to make a bunch of these nights, so I would put on like Queensburg Swizzle, and I would that would be one of the drinks. And I would come in early, and I'd change them every week, and yeah, my shift.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you were making those drinks, were you creating, was that 10 cocktail list your own personal creations?
No, no, they were from
it was just
the
from
list.
That list.
They were.
So you're like, these are the 10 for tonight. It's like, we're doing a Manhattan. We're doing
Yeah, it was,
this.
Yeah. And yeah, it was, I mean, it was a long list. It was probably
yeah,
like 400
there plenty to
drinks
choose
or
from.
So, but it was an opportunity to both practice and to like offer an experience where mm-hmm. the guests had a menu of some things to choose from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's awesome. So, yeah. So then you just kind of, there you were. You just kind of took that all over and you've been bartending happily, I guess, ever since. When did you first get the chance to make your own creations, do your own thing?
I worked at a few places after that. Oh, I guess it was actually at, so I started working at 11 Madison Park during that same time. I gave up my other jobs, but I kept one night a week at White Star to kind of like stay sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go there intending to bartend, which is probably why I kept that night at White Star. But and everybody sort of like starts at the bottom there as a kitchen server and works their way up through the same regimented system. But I had started there in September. They had just gotten their 4 stars from the New York Times. Business went through the roof. And about a month and change in, God, it's so funny to think about the fact that I was there for like 5 months, but at the time, like looking at how I looked at it back then, it all seemed like such a long period of time, like each period of it. But I was, I guess I was 22.
Wow.
And yeah, so the GM, Will Gadara, was like, hey, we need another bartender. We know that you're experienced in this. Do you want to also take these bar shifts? Which was highly controversial at the time because I did not work my way
up.
But anyway, so Leo Robichek, who is still involved in some capacity, well, is involved with Seidel and the Nomad, not technically with EMP anymore, but he's been with them for forever. Mm-hmm. He would hold bar meetings, I guess, every month or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there was a menu reset, I put a cocktail on the menu. And I guess that was my first original menu cocktail anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you remember what it was? Like, what were the origins of that cocktail? You're laughing. I know everyone's like, oh, my first cocktail was this. I've grown so much since then. But sometimes, you know, it just depends what you did.
No,
how do
it
you
was
feel
a good
about
drink.
This drink.
It
yeah.
was... So I remember what it was called.
you're already laughing. That means I'm going to love it.
No, it was just stupid. It was, I think, Eamon, actually. So my friend Eamon, who I mentioned, mm-hmm. was working there. And that's why I started working there. Mm-hmm. Because he was like, oh, come work at Love Medicine. So there were notes for, you know, drinks like Leo rum or Eamon mm-hmm. whiskey or whatever. And mine was a rye drink and it was Aaron Rye. And Amy was like, let's call it air, like A-I-R, air and rye. And I was like, okay, whatever. So it was like a stupid drink name called air and rye. But it was an equal parts drink. I loved those. So it was rye, Strega, lemon. I don't remember what the fourth ingredient was. And it must have been some sort of modifier.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, maybe it was like Kina or Lillet or something. Mm-hmm. And then maybe it was, man, now I really want to know. I wonder if it like lives on the internet anywhere.
I know, right? When was the first bar that you actually started managing? Was that when you came out here to LA or had you managed before?
No, I've managed before. After 11 Madison, I went to this place in the financial district that's no longer there. It was a fine dining restaurant. And I sort of started there as like a floor manager slash service manager and then took over the bar. It's funny. I like tried to run from the bar so much. At 11 Madison, I didn't want to bartend. I wanted to like learn service at this place. I like didn't really want to bartend. I want to be like work my way up to some GM or I not even necessarily GM, but I wanted to open a restaurant for a long time. And then ended up running that bar. And then I left there. Oh, I got laid off.
That creates new career opportunities. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, a lot of what I'm doing now. I wouldn't be doing it if I hadn't been laid off, like in 2007. You know, I always said when I got laid off, it turned out for me at that time to be the best thing that could have happened. You know, sometimes it forces decisions on you or makes you pursue something, you know, that you were thinking of. Like if I remember correctly, when you came to LA, what Harvard and Stone was a bit of an accident as well, like your work there? Yeah. So somehow I feel like I've heard that story. Maybe it was on some other interview I heard you do. But remind me how that came about. Because Harvard and Stone, I mean, when I was living in L.A., first it was the Stone, and it's where you went and saw, like, kind of has-been goth bands play and stuff. And then it became Harvard and Stone, and, you know, it was going to be this, like, you know, nice cocktail bar. But kind of rock and roll. Like, it always had that rock and roll feel to it. And I'm not sure. I can't remember when it changed to Harvard and Stone.
2011.
Yeah. And so you came after it had already started, or?
Oh, yeah. So right. I moved here in 2015.
Yeah, that's right.
I came out to open a bar called Clifton's. And there was a bar in the basement called Shadowbox. Mm-hmm. And that was the one that I was slated to run. And my friend Christine Wiseman, who is also a very well-known bartender, and she...
Broken Shaker Queen, yes.
Broken Shaker, top four American bartender 2020, killing it.
Yeah.
So she told me about a unit that was open in her building, which is right around the corner from Harvard and Stone. So, but I... That was a couple months after I'd moved. I'd been to Harvard once before in like 2011. Mm-hmm. And and I went again like my first week in LA, and I just had a blast. And I was hooked, and I was going almost every night. Like, I was living in Koreatown. I was getting off of work, going home, eating, taking an Uber to Harvard and Stone, like drinking a bunch and going home. This is like almost daily. Chris Amaral, also amazing bartender, runs Odeon, used to call it Polsky's office hours. Because I was there like every night.
Oh, that's awesome.
But so I was going there all the time. I moved in around the corner, and then I was really going there all the time. And in February, Stephen Sue, who managed all of those bars, but was previous to that the GM of Harvard, but he was director of operations, he messaged me with a management opportunity. And I didn't know what it was. I figured it would be for like no vacancy or dirty laundry or something like that.
Yeah.
And so we met up at meetup. Then we went to Winsome. And had a coffee, and he was like, "Yeah, like, do you want to be the bar manager at Harvard and Stone?" And it was like pretty much a no-brainer. I still had to take some time. I took that job, and I was there until July 31st of 2019.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, you being there, you were so perfectly Harvard and Stone, or at least my impressions of it. I always thought a place that's a rock and roll place, you know, had the live music, has the burlesque, you know, just it always had such a great rock and roll vibe, and you fit that really well. So did you ever play music It seems like you've just been doing the bar thing forever. But did you play music?
I play guitar. I also play like a bit of classical piano, but it's been a long time.
Oh wow! Did mom make you take lessons or something? Is that why?
Yeah, mom and dad made me take lessons.
And then you went rock and roll and picked up guitar instead.
Yeah, I discovered guitar, and they were like, "All right, I guess you can give up this piano thing."
Did you ever play bands or anything?
Not really. I would do like one-off, you know, battle of the band stuff, and we'd like, you know, learn the set. But I never really had a band. I wish I had. Mm-hmm. That would have been fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were into this cocktail thing really early on, but I mean, you probably can see the kind of similarities, the parallels anyway, between having a really great bar team and working in harmony together to having a band and putting stuff together as well. Or even like cocktails, creating a cocktail, like writing a song. You know, it's got to be layered. It's got to be harmonious for it to work and everything.
100%.
Right?
100%.
And I know you've taken a lot of the idea behind music and the music industry to apply to the business that you've launched, right? So you did leave Harvard and Stone, but you left specifically because you wanted to do what you're doing now, right? So this is Livewire?
Yeah. I mean, I felt that it was over that last year, the last 6 months that I had worked at Harvard, like the writing on the wall had sort of like become more and more clear that it was just like, it wasn't going to be going anywhere for me. Mm-hmm. And I had already at that point made sort of a promise to myself that this would be the last time that I would work for somebody. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I had been working on a canned and bottled cocktail company for, I guess, 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I had, you know, I really had the concept in 2012. I started working on it and pitching it to some liquor companies to do a bottled cocktail that was like original cocktails. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that. I had medium, like it would sort of happen in fits and starts, right? Mm-hmm. I would have like conversations of varying levels of success. And then, you know, there came a point where I would need to like start, you know, get a real job, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like start, you know.
Yeah.
And so it sort of went on the back burner a lot because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just make the recipe and hand it off. There's a lot. So what this time when I decided like I'm pretty much done here, I left, started working on the brand, raised a tiny seed to start it. And really let it forth in its current iteration, which is Livewire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so
I managed to.
When did you launch Livewire? Was it just at the beginning of this year?
The first cans rolled off the line on March 3rd, mm-hmm. And then by the time they got into warehouse on March 21st, it was like full COVID.
Yeah.
So I had been tasting people on it prior to that. Like, I brought some cans back with me from the distillery, and I had gotten some commitments, and then they all ended up coming through on it.
Which is great. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So all the ones that stayed open, like Arclight was going to bring it on, but unfortunately that didn't happen. So, yeah.
Now, your aesthetic behind this, I remember reading that you were approaching it. Now, again, we have to keep in mind, now we're in COVID land. So, you know, things have changed. But I remember your approach was you wanted to put a cocktail in a can, but also you want to make rock stars out of bartenders, in a sense. Because, you know, bartenders, you know, there's this culture that has developed, I think, since the Renaissance or whatever, you know, the mid-2000s, where bartenders are known outside of the city that they bartend in. You know, people bounce around and do guest bartending spots and all this. So if someone is interested in the spirits industry or the cocktail world, they can go to a bar and be like, oh, there's this one bartender I really would love to be served by or something, you know. There's definitely this culture around it now. And I think part of what you're trying to do is highlight this and bring more to it. Am I getting that?
Yeah,
right?
Totally. So I think from an artistic perspective, what I'm trying to do is to bring the art that the bartenders create mm-hmm. to people around the world. Mm-hmm. So this is original work. That's how I approach it as a creative work. It's not simply utilitarian,
yeah.
like a shot of whiskey might be, or even like a gin and tonic. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like, there's creativity behind it, and people really like that new experience and like that combination.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, as you said, the industry was growing, but there was a disconnect the entire time between the aims of the media and the abilities of the consumer and the liquor companies, right? So you could read about Yale Van Groff in the New York Times,
yeah.
but if you live in New York or Detroit or Miami, and she's not coming to your town to do a guest bartending shift, you're not going to taste her drinks mm-hmm. until
you go to
you
LA.
See her in person,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. So it's essentially like the equivalent of living in the 1800s and reading about Beethoven,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you're not going to know what his music sounds like unless you can play the sheet music
mm-hmm.
or unless he comes to your town.
Mm-hmm.
So this is essentially the phonograph, right?
Yeah.
So we are, we're taking the creative work of the bartender, we're keeping its integrity and putting it into a can and engineering it, in the same way, you know, that a sound engineer engineers the room to put it onto a record or a CD.
Yeah, because that can't be easy to get it just right. You know, you've got, like you're saying, with an album, you want it to have that sound of the warmth or the sound of mechanics, whatever it is the sound you're going for. To create a cocktail and put it in a can and have it taste the way you intend it to taste, that's tricky shit, man. That's like science.
Yeah. yeah. So, you know, I definitely really, really look to food science on one hand mm-hmm. and then to the integrity of being a bartender in our current world of bartending on the other. So, mm-hmm. you know, food science is only as good as the end product that it creates. Mm-hmm. So you can use it to any means that you want. But like, for me, what that is like, give people the best thing they've ever had out of a can.
Yeah.
So you don't really see somebody with both of those balancing forces in this world, right? Mm-hmm. So in this industry. So I think that comes across in the cans.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, that's basically
And
what.
So basically, so the drink gets out there, so the bartender's name is attached to that drink.
Correct.
So that if someone if it pops up on a shelf in a boutique liquor store in Chicago and they see this and they're like, hey, I know this name, Aaron Polsky. I've heard he's a great bartender, and oh, this means I get to try his drink and I'm in Chicago. So this is what you're going for, is to get this like all over the world, get people's name in their drink.
That's part of it for sure. The other part of it is that we were a young brand and
yeah.
we're a young industry, right?
Yeah.
So because of this disconnect that's existed for so long, even if somebody like has read about me 10 times,
mm-hmm.
if they haven't tried my drinks, my name still might not resonate with that person.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal is like that they buy it because they think it's interesting and cool. And then when they try it and they like it, they connect that bartender's name with
mm-hmm.
as somebody who makes things that they like. So that when Joey puts out his second can, the fans of Joey, who became fans of Joey through his first can,
mm-hmm.
are going to be excited to try a second drink.
That's awesome. Awesome. So how has COVID hit you? Because, you know, you're not bartending, so you didn't have to worry about your bar getting shut down. But, you know, at the same time, other businesses did. However, those selling just straight up spirits have been doing great during this time. You know, like the liquor stores and all this. People are buying like crazy. So, I mean, I could see it helping and hindering, because you can't get out there and do the marketing you might want to do. But at the same time, if you could get it in the places, people should be buying cans like crazy. What have you experienced during this time?
Yeah, so, you know, the in-store tasting is a very valuable asset to any brand owner. And as you pointed out, we haven't been able to do that. At the same time, I've had a very supportive friend network that's been supporting the brand. And I think in them doing so, have really helped to spread the enthusiasm that surrounds the brand. So as of this week, we're in 75 accounts nationwide.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, we've sold, you know, and a lot of them are reorders, you know, so we're doing pretty well. The mix between like the off-premise liquor stores and the on-premise, so the bars and restaurants, is probably like 95% to 5%. It was always meant to skew towards the retail, but it was probably going to be more of a 70-30 mix.
Yeah.
So I just sort of view that as an area that we can, that we will visit when it's available to us. But like, it's not like I'm out of retail stores to sell into. There's still plenty.
Yeah, there are. Totally.
You know, and I truly believe that when I sell to a bar that we're selling them a great product that will make them money. But I also tread lightly because I understand that every bar is in a very different situation financially and with respect to their outstanding inventory and all that. But, you know, I mean, in a lot of sense, like having this to focus on during COVID, you know, and having all the time has really helped me quite a bit.
To focus and really get it. Right now you guys have how many offerings? Four offerings?
We have three. We have two more coming out very shortly.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Yeah. That's really great news. So I seem to remember it now. I know you sent me a playlist for Golden God. And Golden God is, of course, I hear that and I just think of Almost Famous, right? Yep. You know, rock and roll movie Almost Famous. And is that where it came from? Is that where that name came from?
Kind of. That's where I first heard it. But that Almost Famous scene is a reference to Robert Plant.
That's right.
In an interview with Cameron Crowe in the 70s where he said, I'm a golden god, jokingly, like, standing, I think, on the balcony of the Hyatt House on
that's
Sunset.
Right. Yeah.
So that's actually, that was sort of the starting point, but.
And your company's called Livewire, which, hi, Motley Crue, yeah?
Kind of, but again, not actually, like, where, that's, that definitely helped me push up, like helped to give me a push over the Livewire fence. But I actually really, really, really spent a lot of time thinking about what the company would be called. And I wanted it to be somehow musically tied, but I wanted it to convey who we were as a company and who we were as people. And the attitude behind it. And if you think of the word Livewire, right? That's like a dangerous loose cannon of a person who's like also cool and enthralling in a way. So like Axl Rose or Joan Jett or like, you know, somebody like that. I don't remember how I got to it. I remember where I was, but when I got to Livewire, I was like, this has got to be the one. There were like some pretty close seconds, but then some Motley Crue song, there's an AC/DC song, you know, there's definitely that connection, but it to me captures the sort of like intensity of the brand.
Yeah. So I have maybe a silly question for you. You've got three right now. The only one that the name I can remember is Golden God. That one comes up a lot. So, I want you to give me a pairing. Give me your canned cocktail and like the band that you should be listening to while you're drinking it.
Or for music, Golden God, I mean, I very much see like Black Sabbath vibes for Golden God.
Yeah. What's in the Golden God?
It's rye, brandy, apricot, green tea, and elderflower. 7.5 ABV. Mm-hmm. It's sparkling. It's a 12-ounce can.
Yeah. And that's going to be Sabbath.
Yeah, you know, when you talk ingredients, it's very like, it's funny. It's like everything comes off twee. But to me, like the artwork on it, you know, it's me, but it's all like sort of fucked up is like half me, half Terminator 2 me.
Yeah, like
this devilly looking thing.
Yeah.
And you know, the vibe is like is kind of metal on it, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. and I feel like that for my other can as well, like with a different vibe. But mm-hmm. You know, every cocktail is gonna be like booze and fruit, you know.
Right? Every, yeah, that's so, true. That's true.
It's just more of a vibe of like what I feel that the drink is about.
Yeah. What was the music that you were listening to when you were growing up? I mean, you have this rock and roll thing, even your the cocktails of rock and roll, all this. So, but you were playing classical piano. I know that was more your parents than you.
I mean, I really got turned on to the rock and roll thing when I was, my brother made me a mixtape mm-hmm. that was like, and of course it was called this, but he called it like Aaron's Introduction to Real Music. He was like 7 years older than me. He was probably like a junior in high school because I was listening to like shitty like MTV TRL like whatever.
Yeah. I did that to my little brother as well, just FYI. He's 6.5 years younger than me, and I was like, no, you should be listening to this.
Yeah.
He did, that's our job as big siblings, you know?
So he, you know, there was like Zeppelin and Pink Floyd on it and a bunch of like, you know, he threw in some like Arlo Guthrie too. Mm-hmm. He threw in, there was a lot. It was some Janis. It was basically like, you know, a classic rock radio mixtape.
Yeah.
And then he got me the Zeppelin box set. And so that's sort of like where it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started playing guitar, I really got into it. And that was in 7th or 8th grade. I think it was 8th grade. Mm-hmm. I started playing guitar and I was like, it was like game over. Like, growing my hair out, I'm going on eBay and I'm getting Levi's bell bottoms. I'm like this is...
You're all, I found myself. So yeah. What were you playing on guitar first? What was the first song you tried to teach yourself? Do you remember? You got to remember that. That's
my
important.
My friend taught me the riff, two Green Day riffs. It was Basket Case and Brain Stew.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I was in yeah, it was 8th grade, mm-hmm. so that was very, very much, you know, a thing. It was classic for us. And then I remember, like, Hell's Bells was also one of the first one that I, like, tried to learn the tab of. Black Dog, you know, all those riffs.
Yeah.
And I think the first song I learned to play all the way through was Paranoid.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's
solo
pretty
cool. And everything.
Nice.
That was awesome.
Nice. The first time you went through, did you just like shake your hands like, yes? I mean, you can see, since we're doing this on video, I mean, we can see each other, but others can't. You can see there's a guitar right behind me. You know,
oh, nice.
And
I got,
yep, there you go. You got a couple. Mine's an acoustic. That's the first guitar I ever owned. That's it right there.
Awesome.
I've had it since I was 8. And my first song was Blackbird because I'm like, okay, that should be easy to learn on an acoustic. I can get through this. And then I don't think I really played it again until maybe like the 90s. And I was doing stuff like the Geraldine Fibbers, which is these weird LA country rock band. Not even country rock. They were more like punk with country. They were a weird artsy kind of band. Nels Klein comes from that band. But yeah, so you know, it's just one of those things that hangs out there. You can tell if I'm playing or not based on how long my fingernails are.
Hilarious.
How calloused are your fingers right now? You know? Right. So yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Do you still pick it up and play it from time to time?
Yeah.
Well, now you're locked home. So.
What's that?
You're locked at home, so I would think you'd have some time in between to.
Yeah, I mean, even though, like, I really went for it. I picked it back up. It had been like a long time. I had them here, but I like never played them. And then in like November of 2018, I was like, you know what? You have these guitars. Like, you like never even brought an amp with you. Like, get an amp, get some pedals. Like, so I sort of like kicked back into gear on it.
That's nice. Do your cats like it? Have you tried it yet for your cats?
My cats behave very strangely when I play. One of them always hops onto my lap and puts his snout up against the strings.
Oh, that's so
and
cute.
Like bites the strings and like tries to get the vibrations. But he also, when I play like a high E, mm-hmm. like an open high E, he or even like the B, he'll wrestle the other cat, which they do already, but like with a tiny bit more aggression. And ooh. The other cat, like, they always like meows back at them, which they're never vocal when they do it. It's so strange.
That's
and it's
weird.
Only when they hit those strings.
Wow,
it's very funny.
That something about that feels very primal, like you just hit some chord. It's like the dog whistle that we can't hear but they can hear. There's some cat tone or something.
Yeah,
you could start a whole army, I think. Whole cat army with
oh
that.
My God.
It would be the cutest, cuddliest, deadliest army ever, right? Well, I think on that note, we could probably wrap it up. I think what we need to tell people is how they can find Livewire Canned Cocktails.
Yeah.
How they can find you if they want to find you, and how they can find the cocktails. Because now is the time. If anyone wants to stock up their fridge, if they're tired of trying to be a home bartender, which a lot of people, I think, have hit that point. I feel like in the early days of the quarantine and the lockdown, people were like, I'm going to make great drinks at home. And then they start realizing how much inventory that takes for that one drink you like from that one bar. And they're like, okay, I'm just drinking old fashions because that's like really easy to do. So I think that this would be an opportune time for people to grab a canned cocktail because they can stick it in their fridge and have something a little more special without working too hard.
Yeah, and you know, you're supporting the bartenders that are on the label, right? So the other thing that I brought over from the music business model is that the bartenders get royalties on the cans.
Amazing. Amazing.
And so that was very important to me to build this platform through which they can scale their abilities and make money off of that, right? Because like we don't have that sort of scaling platform that like an actor or a musician or you know,
yeah, totally
something like that might have.
So if they want to find it,
so yeah, we're you can go to livewiredrinks.com and that shows every single retail store that stocks us. You can also order right from the website.
Awesome, that's great.
Yeah,
so depending on the state.
What's that?
Does it depend what state they're in? We're in California, so you can just ship it anywhere.
It allows you to select your state.
Got it.
And then we take care of the rest.
Got it. Look at that. Fantastic. So that's just livewire.com, I'm guessing.
Livewiredrinks.com.
Livewiredrinks.com. Okay.
Yep.
Oh, that's really fantastic. So people don't even, if they live in a state that doesn't have a fancy little cocktail shop, then they can still have a chance of trying these drinks.
And we do free shipping on 16 cans or more.
Nice.
So
nice.
That's cool too.
That's very cool. And then you've got, I'm sure, the Instagram and all of that as well. There's a Livewire Instagram, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's at Livewire Drinks.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess if anyone wants to reach you, they can do that through Livewire as well.
Yep, you can email through the website and
that's all the stuff.
Still a small company. I get those emails.
Fantastic. Now, I seem to remember too that. God, that fantastic sounded so game show host. Fantastic! I feel like you guys, as Livewire, had a plan. You wanted to, like, kind of have all the bartenders that were affiliated with Livewire that created cocktails that you wanted them to kind of go on tour too, or something. Was that something? Does that ring? Am I remembering this correctly? Like, you had a thing, not only giving them the royalties, but also treating them to like making appearances and things like that. Like, in an ideal world,
you know, that's
future.
That's
Aaron's.
Certainly a possibility, and something we're looking towards the future with.
Yeah,
You know, of course, it's a different time, so it's
it
not
is
as
a
easy
different time
to do.
Yeah. Yeah, but like maybe one day there will be a Livewire tour and you'll get to see all these super bartenders in a town near you. Right? Well, cool. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you being here and everything.
Of course.
And
thank you.
I still have to try my first Livewire. So that's actually on the agenda for tonight.
Yeah. Exciting.
No, very exciting. I'll have to hit you back and let you know what I think, which is going to be that they're tasty.
Grasping to control, so I better hold on.
A super extra special thank you to Aaron for finally being a guest. He's been like a goal of mine for a long time, and I think over the last couple years I would run into Aaron somewhere and be like, dude, you got to be on my podcast. So thank you for finally being a guest on the podcast. And everyone, remember to go check out livewiredrinks.com, and you can order those drinks to be sent to you, shipped to you, so you don't even have to go to a liquor store if they don't have it in your neighborhood. But if they do have it in your neighborhood, support those local liquor stores. But yeah, you know, you can get it in 4-packs, which is super handy. So much nicer than, you know, having to make your own drink. I'm just gonna say that. And the ones that are out right now are especially refreshing and tasty. So thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Livewire Drinks. And Aaron, please give your kitties an extra smooch for me. Everyone else, thank you for tuning in. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SheBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.